Welcome back to a brand new episode of the Staying Mighty podcast. Today's episode will actually be co-hosted by Aaron Corona. Aaron is a recent graduate from Cal State LA and a former team member of the Cal State LA Baja SAE team. Pleasure having you here with us, Aaron.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, definitely. And on today's episode, we have a very special guest, regional technical support manager at Cummins, fellow Cal State LA alum, and a former team member from the Cal State LA Baja SAE team, Daniel Polo. Thank you for joining us today, Daniel.
Hey, thank you, Juan and Liz and Aaron. Congratulations on the recent grad. It's been an honor. And if I can provide some perspective on looking back on some amazing years in Cal State LA and the team, I feel honored. So thank you for inviting me.
All right, no, definitely, Daniel, definitely. We'll go ahead and jump right into it. We definitely want to know a lot about sort of your history, your career paths that you've gone through. So if you can, maybe give us like a quick synopsis, like a quick 1 to 2 minute, like where you started and how you came to be where you are now at Cummins.
Good. Yeah, no, it's, I think, as you guys probably picked it up by now, have an accent, and that accent is actually my first language is, Spanish. So I was born in South America in Ecuador, and I went to polytechnic school there. And maybe we'll get into it a little later, how I picked my major. I think that's some interesting story about that. But then I decided to, through some ventures in life, I moved to the States. And then my heart was always on the engineering thing. After trying some other business ventures. So I went back to school. I looked at the curriculum with Cal State LA, and I decided to transfer all my units to Cal State LA and interview with a couple of professors like Dr. Sharif. And we became friends too at that time. And it kind of, it felt like it was the right thing shooting. And that was in the process of me immigrating to the States as well. And so it was a great opportunity for me. And then from then, I had some opportunities that presented themselves within the faculty in Cal State LA to be part of JPL. And so aerospace was my, per se, my first love. Of mechanical engineering, and it was a great experience. I didn't work on anything, any flight projects per se. All my experience was around R&D, but it gave me that first it modeled me to in the engineering world. How does it, and this great nation and very important play in aerospace. How does it work, the engineering world? And so that gave me that window into what is in the future. So I stayed there for a few years. It was a great experience. But then I also had an itch for what is corporate America, essentially. And I wanted to have these more of these private notion of how things work, and yet still within the technical realm. And so some opportunities came along, and one that it was kind of close to my heart was actually within the automotive industry. And so then a recruiter approached me, and I had known the branding Cummins from early on in my life. My dad, actually civil engineer, had a construction company. And I remember one of the things that he in South America, he will essentially in the procurement process of equipment, he will make sure that it was a Cummins power, because it was a very easy to work on in every single project that he had. And so that's why I picked, and the rest of its history. 14 years later, I'm still within the company. I moved roles like about 4 to 5 times. And we can talk more about it. And so I went from very technical roles to now, I will call them somewhat technical, more with a prominent business component of my role, marketing team. So that's essentially what I do now.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. Definitely seems like you've gone through not only through different vines of corporate industry, but different countries as well. Like that must have been like a huge change for you. We had spoken a little bit earlier, and you had mentioned that you had wanted to go into business before ever going into engineering. What about business called you initially? Like, yeah, that's what I want to strive for when you began.
It was essentially my upbringing. Even though my grandfather is a civil engineer and my dad is a civil engineer, my dad and my dad's side of the family, they're very entrepreneurial. And so it was kind of one of the things in his family. Yeah, you got to do the engineering thing at school. But then it turned out after school, everybody had their own business. And so they were very industrious. And so I guess that was my upbringing and me just growing up with them. Said, oh, I got to go to business school. And my dad, I think, probably gave me the best advice that I ever received in my life when the day that I was actually going to pick my major, my school, and it was a business school. And my dad said, hey, son, we need to have the talk. And one of the things he said, look, I don't know how to put it with good words, but essentially businessmen are born and entrepreneurs are born. You don't need to be made one. So in essence, and I don't want to sound, business school is really an asset that you need to understand the language. It's like when you go and want to learn a language, you go to school or you read a book, you read a manual, you need to know the protocols. And so I think definitely business school is something that I will recommend to anybody. Having said that, my dad was saying, well, I wanted to be an entrepreneur, right? And he was right. To be an entrepreneur, you are born one. And so then he said, his follow-up statement was, just go with what you think is your hobby. I mean, and I always had a mechanical mind. As mechanical engineers, I think we can think in 3D, right?
Yeah.
And they're pretty definitely. Good with numbers, exactly. Yeah. And so, sure enough, I said, you know what? I look into that. Just going to do the engineering thing, and mechanical was my thing. And that was the best advice. I think if I look back as far as return on investment and my satisfaction, I had a very, very joyful and fulfilling career by doing so. So that was essentially like a point in my life that I remember the best advice. And I think I cannot thank him enough because he knew me well. He knew what I was doing. And we have a little side comic here, a little ranch back then that I grew up on. And yeah. I have taken apart every single, anything that moved or it had any mechanical component. I think he saw that. And even though I was good wood numbers and also yeah. some business ventures, but he saw that my passion was on a different trade.
Yeah. Like you had mentioned, like right. Everybody definitely has, or those that are going to go to engineering or specifically mechanical, you have that knack to sort of take things apart, understand how they work, even if it might not be a car or like something crazy, just anything really, like a lawnmower or whatever it could be. So yeah, I totally understand. And I felt like I was also kind of on the same boat. My background, at least with my family, was very much working in automotive, like working on cars and a mechanic. And that's what I felt like my path could have been, but you know, just like you, engineering and having that mechanical mind and being able to exactly see in 3D, it totally made sense.
Yeah. And so that was good. I mean, I developed more of that through my, you know, the formal training that we all had in engineering school. But I think it's very important to if you're undecided, and I guess maybe this goes for kids, right? They don't know where to go. I think it's very important just to go to those that are like close to you, because it can be very overwhelming just to make such a such a big decision at that early on in your life.
Definitely.
And so if you can go back to those that are close to you and ask for feedback, hey, what do you think about that? Maybe you might get something positive.
So moving forward, you mentioned you were originally from Ecuador. Mm-hmm. How would you describe your transition from Ecuador over to the United States?
It was something that had to be done. If I put it simply, because when I started my engineering career in Ecuador, and I went to a very prestigious and polytechnic school, Escuela Politécnica Nacional. And so it was a Jesuit founded polytechnic school. But all the manuals and essentially textbooks that we study, they were essentially written with somebody participating or in English, right? And a lot of the stuff that you would read there said, okay, well, like for instance, the Bernoulli equation, the lab that we had down there, it was a decent lab, but I really want to experience more of it, right? And different aspects and fluid mechanics or anything like that, right? And so there were some limitations when it comes to resources. I mean, keep in mind that Ecuador is still considered a third world, right? Even though there's a lot of, I think we compensate for our preparations and reviewing theories and all that, but as far as having the resources just to develop somebody, there are some limitations. And so I recognized that early on in my career, and they said, well, I need to go to the first world, whatever that is, I need to do it. And so I started looking into that and transferring to some of the schools. At the same time, I had a business opportunity with my brother. And so we launched a business opportunity, and that's how we moved. But going back to the career here, when I essentially enrolled in Cal State LA, and I saw the resources that we had in Cal State LA, it was, I mean, I was in overdrive. I couldn't put my fingers in enough. I think I had mentioned to you guys, I started with 12 units, then I moved to 16, and then my last 2 years I graduated with 19 units, and that was because I want to put my fingers on everything, and so
yeah.
But that was it. I mean, I was like a sponge. My brain was a sponge and tried to take advantage of all of that, and so that was great. It was a kid in a candy store, essentially.
Yeah, it seemed like you were definitely stacked with not only courses, but I mean, you were part of Baja SAE. I mean, can you talk a little about how you got into that? And I know you mentioned Sharif and sort of how his role played into that as well.
Yeah, I one of the things, and my dad actually, I really had a little bit of experience with automotive early on in life. My dad was rally racing. I mean, that was one of his hobbies. Rally car racing. And so I knew a little bit about, you know, all the physics and geometries that goes into, especially in suspension and all that. And so I had the conversation with Dr. Sharif, and also he probably saw my eagerness. And I had I remember one in his office, he said, well, you know, Daniel, I think it's going to be good that you go there right now. It was like that right now. And he actually took a little piece of paper and wrote the name, said, hey, Kevin, go talk to this gentleman down there. And it was Kevin Nahr, right? So I went down there. Hey, Kevin, I come from, you know, a doctor, he sent me your way. And so it was awesome. At first, it was one of the things that Kevin we still talk, is a great guy. That's the other person that I received pretty good advice and conversations. I mean, sure, some time, but one of the things that he probably saw me like, okay, yeah, you just got here right now, so we'll give you something. And I said it, he said, I think you mentioned, he said, yeah, come back whenever you have time. I think he was waiting to see what kind of commitment I had.
Yeah.
I said, no, I can build something right now. Can you help me with anything? I mean, I can help you with anything. Sorry, that's my dog.
No worries.
One of the things that he said, hey, build the steering wheel. And I said, man, I would just give me something else. But so I built, that was my first design, just designed the steering wheel of the car.
What? Pretty cool. I know Kevin has some crazy stories about Baja and like and all that stuff. That's insane. I'm sure you've learned like a ton throughout Baja as well. Like even just that steering wheel thing, I'm sure it's helped you throughout industry. You might like look back and I'm like, yeah, I remember doing that.
Oh no, I mean later on. I mean one of the things I had learned early on in I learned this in Ecuador. I think I mentioned to you, Juan, that I have a lathe.
Yeah,
I have some machinery in my garage. And so I was pretty good with the lathe. And so all the bushings that go into the tubing, I made a lot of that. And so hinges and all that. But anyways, in that year, I think that was the first year, it was either 05 or 04 or 05 that we did the five-lane suspension. That was really, we all learned, you know, about camber, caster, toe in, toe out, and how the vehicle will perform.
Yeah, I think a lot of students definitely do take a ton away from SAE, but they don't necessarily see how large of an impact it can make in the industry from what you've learned there on campus to what you learn in your next, essentially your first job. How do you feel like your experience in SAE helped you throughout industry?
It was great. In fact, it helped me because there was another window, another tool that we had. And so when I was invited in the Honor Society from SAE, I wanted to know what is this about? I mean, Society of Automotive Engineers. And then we got into, well, you can get a lot of papers. There's a lot of research. There's a lot of common interest from engineers and industry. And so that opened a huge window in my career. Then I obviously SAE has got a role in aerospace, but it has a very, very essentially predominant role in automotive, obviously. Later on in my career and early on with Cummins, I was really one of the heavy users within Cummins with the SAE archives for everything. And I'll get into it. I mean, when I specialized in mechanical engineering, it was mostly in the structures. But within Cummins, I did a lot of, and not because I had to, but it was more because I had to necessity, essentially identifying a lot of the communication protocols between modules and a vehicle. And so, for instance, Gen 1939 is essentially a protocol that's developed by SAE. And it's a huge document with many layers. And me having that experience initially and just having the familiarity how SAE archives and documentation works, it was an asset in my career.
So you've also mentioned that during your time in senior design, you actually got married. So how did you manage the balance of both romance and college?
It is, I guess one of the things is we don't know what is the plan that God has for us. And I think you have to be humble as these very precious and important events that come in your life. I think I'm not going to deny, I'm not going to put it any other way, but it was actually, I wish, but you don't know, we are only humans. I wish maybe probably I had more time just to enjoy a lot more of it. But at the same time, I found a great partner, right? And so, It was a time for me. But within school, she was great because you can imagine first years of marriage, I was spending a lot of Saturdays and some Sundays with the mini Baja team. And so that was, I guess she's great in the sense that she understood, and she probably saw the same thing that my dad, Dr. Sharif, saw. A word is my passion, right? And so that's what I think you guys can probably decipher by now. She was a great partner in the sense, and she's a great partner in the sense that she sees who you are, right? But I won't deny that, because like now kids and family, they demand, not demand, but I think every parent should invest precious, that's a precious time that you got to put into it. Same thing with relationships. So we tend to forget, especially at young years, when you're younger, that there are some very important things in life. And so I start managing my time there and maybe having her participate in some of it with her. And so, but it was actually very, very, very not difficult, but maybe challenging just to reconcile both.
Yeah, I can imagine how it could definitely get stressful. I remember actually talking to Kevin Narr about this, and I forget exactly what his advice was, but it was pretty much, if she doesn't understand like the passion or like the work that you're putting in, leave her. Like,
just deal with it later. Yeah, like, I can see that coming from Kevin. Probably my answer was more elegant. He's more straight to the point. I think, and same thing with her. I mean, from as I'm talking, you gotta recognize what her passions, and so I think we all have these in engineering world. We have this passion for these things that we do, and so yeah. I mean, and that's what she saw that.
Yeah, so it's definitely a time commitment. Your friend, not just relationships, but friends in general, you need to kind of be aware of the time commitment that you're putting into these things. You know, that's never. Sometimes it's hard for them to understand, but you know they. Once they kind of see what you're doing, some of the cool things that you're working on, they typically tend to understand.
And Aaron, funny that you mentioned that. In my first year, freshman year, I have a regular group of friends that they decided to go to the polytechnic school that I enrolled to. And essentially they mentioned, even to this day that I talked to them, said, hey, you essentially disappear for a year. And that was out of my circle of friends that year. And so that was in my freshman year, because I really wanted to really do the science. And I mean, you got to prepare. Freshman year is probably can be the most challenging, depending how prepared you are.
Right, definitely.
We mentioned Kevin Narr a few times because we've had him on the podcast. I don't know if you had a chance to take a look at that one, but he's definitely played a pivotal role in a lot of our lives, actually. But you also actually worked with Kevin Narr at JPL, not only in Baja, but then you also jumped onto JPL like he did. How was it like actually working with him? How was that environment? Were you working closely with him, or was it just, you know, just distant coworkers?
There was actually a couple of anecdotes that we have with him. Is I think Kevin is, you know, he's really setting the bar very high. And so one of the things that I wanted to do with Kevin is I feel like you want to always one-up each other, right?
Yes.
And so that can happen with Kevin very easy. And so one of the things that we were designing these hinges, and so I said, hey, I think we can do it with finite element method. But if I put the cool story was, instead of making a huge mesh out of it, I did maybe 2-3 elements. And I tell them, look, if you put it on, back then we used to use Nastron and Patron. If you do it on Nastron and Patron, I can do it by hand and I do it faster. So no way. It were on the desk there, on the cubes, in the cubicle in the lab. I'll do it by hand. And I was actually taking some of the classes of 500 level courses in Cal State LA in FEM, Final Element Method. And the professor was very, very, very difficult back then. And so I was one of the few, actually, we enrolled like 10 of us. And by the end of the class, we were 3 or 4. And so, but I passed that class anyways. I did it by hand, and we compared the results after, you know, maybe like, I don't know, 30 minutes. And he said, no way, you did it. You got the same results by hand. Obviously it was only like three elements. It was not really a huge mesh, yeah, but, right. I think that was one of the experiences that we had with Kevin. And Kevin, after the years, he became like one of the persons that I see in my career that, I mean, it's something like, it will tell you the way it will tell you things the way it is. And so that was a great thing, just to have somebody like that you can work on and challenge you. But then we started kind of like working on the same stuff, and I kind of took a little bit over of what he was doing. And one day, essentially, he got enrolled in a different project, and I see these gentlemen that came from another lab with these kind of all wearing black and JPL. And then they took his computer away, took everything away. And we used to have a shared drive on the network, and they told me, yeah, you're not ever to share anything with Kevin again, because the project he's working on, he's got the clearance that you don't have the clearance, and Kevin does, and he's moving on. And that was it. Then we only talked just like that. I mean, we still actually kind of share the same office, but we will only go and have lunch together with other Cal State LA students.
They didn't even let you look at him. You pass his cubicle and just kind of.
It was kind of like that. I mean, they want to make the point. Said, hey, yeah, he's working on something else. And I don't know. Maybe you ask him today, hey, what were you working on?
maybe now he's at liberty to discuss that.
Yeah.
It's actually funny that you bring up the FEM, the finite element method, because he actually did a workshop for the Baja team about finite element, about modeling. And he really stressed about reducing your amount of elements and making your problem a lot easier. So he probably picked that up from you.
I hope so. I'm going to remind him that. And I think I still have that, because he was a very significant deal for me. I mean, like, he gave me the credit. Hey, you got it. So that was good.
Yeah, and the finite element method by hand is definitely not the easiest. I mean, granted, it's only a few meshes, only a few elements, but still not. Pretty difficult to beat a machine in that case.
Yeah, and more than anything, is actually the professor that I had is all, and I'm not good at these, by the way. And just to show you the effort that was put into just getting the answer right, essentially, I was actually going through the procedure. How do I do it? I mean, if you ask me, it's been 15 years. If you ask me now, I have no idea probably what I did.
So, now that you're at Cummins, why don't you tell us a little more about your experience as the regional technical support manager?
So, like I mentioned, my essentially the dominant role that I have now is within the marketing organ, essentially the distribution. And after being part of the essentially more of a global and national role, I decided just to probably move into more of a distribution marketing role. The one thing that the Cummins does is actually is always challenging just to move. And so it is a great organization in that sense. I think Juan and I shared with other students in Cal State LA. And actually Anthony, for instance, Anthony got hired by Cummins. And so one of the things that he asked me, what do you think about the company? Well, I the sky is the limit, essentially. I worked in several countries. Every time that there used to be an assignment and I didn't have a family, essentially I said, hey, can I go? So it was great. And so gave me the opportunity to see what do we do not only in the US, but also what do we do in some other continents. At one point I decided, yeah, the technical thing is there. And I have intimate knowledge on the product, but it's always evolving. Cummins is a technology company. So essentially it's always changing. But I had the confidence in the product that I said, well, maybe I can probably go maybe a little more external in the front end and the business side of things. And so that's what I took this technical support manager, where we advise account executives and essentially big fleets. Now my team is taking care of fleets in the Western United States. And that is great now, because now indirectly, essentially, I get to influence the purchasing decision of these big players and the logistics and transportation and trucking industry in the United States. And so you need to be sharp. You need to bring something to the table that is going to resonate with their decisions. And so I think that technical background is an asset in my case, because it's not only truthful and we have a great product, but I'm very proud. I mean, I'm very proud of and very truthful in the sense of bringing technical facts to those decision makers on what is going to move goods from A to B in an efficient way. Not only move them, but we got to do it efficiently. So
kind of with that, now that you are kind of in a more managerial position, are there kind of aspects of maybe those sole engineering jobs that you kind of miss, or kind of wish that you could experience once again?
Yeah, no, it's I do miss that. And actually, going back to remember what I mentioned initially in the session, what I mentioned about my dad's, I think he's a steel ride till this day, because he knows that my heart is on those technical things. So I had mentioned to you guys, and Juan, to you, that I have a mill and a lathe. I have a CNC in my garage, 4,000 pounds. That, of course, my wife loves it. she thinks 4,000 pound, 4,000 pounder paperweight, but for me, it's just everything. and so I have equipment there, me, TIG welders, that I build things, and still, like, it's kind of like your mind goes there, and probably that's part of the inventor part of it that we all as an engineer have. I really enjoyed learning and also, like I said, driving these efficiency projects with my team and taking it to fruition to customers and said, hey, this is how much money you save. And so it's a little different though. And now what we do is essentially the business now is do a lot of data mining and see where is that we can, even though it might sound boring, if you can take these abstract stuff and make something that is going to deliver some level of efficiency or a product, that's also I like that too. And so that's technical. It's not really kind of like before we used to design it on CAD. I still have a CAD license on my personal machine, and I modeled it and I put it on G code on my whenever I can on my mill, and I cut parts everything's over designed and it looks great. And I do little projects here and there, but I think that never is going to go away. I think that that's still going to be there, right? Even as a hobby, it will be there.
Yeah, that's good. You still have your outlet, your way of feeding that satisfaction.
Yeah. In fact, actually, when a couple of years ago, I went to the competition here in Gorman, which is not so far from my home. And so,
some I remember guys, you paid us a visit, yeah.
Yeah, I remember, and I think you guys were struggling with something. So you can go to my garage and have a full-on shop. And Kevin was like, yeah, no, thank you. But, I mean, I think we figured it out, and you guys fixed it there. And I think that was me more of, hey, let me get in and fix something right now.
I think I remember what you were talking about. You were probably talking about the bent kingpin spindles.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yeah. That's what it was.
Yeah. 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 And so we were trying to fix that there. And so, but I mean, those things and also your time changes too with the family too. And also too, right now, I want to see maybe one, I have three kids. And so one of my kids picks that up. Right. And maybe there's an opportunity for them actually just to get the leg up in design phases.
Yeah, right. No, I get you. It's funny that you bring that up. Like as an alumni or being a part of Baja, like you want to jump back in. Like you want to like be like, oh, I can help. Like I remember this. I remember the adrenaline that you get from trying to fix a car with only 10 minutes left to get to tech inspection or whatever. And myself and one of my good friends, Reggie, like we always see the Baja guys working and we're like, hey, do you guys need some help? Like, let me get in there. And Aaron just graduated, so I'm sure okay. you're gonna feel that too, Aaron, but you're gonna have to like hold back a little bit, you know.
Kind of give the new generation some free rein. Yeah, I definitely feel that transferring on over the front suspension. It's like I feel that need to want to help out as much as I can, but like I gotta give them a little bit of free rein too, you know. Let them.
Yeah, that's part of it, right? Like you gotta let them, you know, fail sometimes. Like you gotta let them, you know, struggle, because that's probably one of the biggest opportunities for you to actually learn from it and grow as an individual and as an engineer, you know.
Yeah.
So to kind of jump back into a little bit of your time at JPL and at Cummins. We do have a question from Instagram from Crystal BC. She has a question. She said, what skills were transferable between both of the companies from JPL to Cummins? Was there some sort of difference between the two?
It was different. I mean, I think there were general skill set that you got to take it with you. I think one of the things that it was a completely different and jobs first, because I was working, like, you know, we were doing FEM by hand, right, with Kevin. And then I got into these other, my first role with the Cummins was an application engineer. Essentially, you have an engine, you have several systems and you put them together. And so the whole FEM and the design aspect of components are already done. You actually have to marry with the company we produce with and integrate it to some other components and even the vehicle. But there was a little bit of, in my case, actually, I had taken also with Kevin some vibration 500 course levels with Kevin, vibration analysis and things like that. And so that skill set applies, because when you have a spacecraft going into orbit, you're gonna have some motions and some vibrations and some oscillation rates, right? Same thing with a vehicle, right? And so that skill set served me. Probably the most important one, like I mentioned early, how do you do research and development, R&D? I mean, that was great, because you will think that If I pick up a textbook on combustion, internal combustion engines and technology right now, and I learn, I'm only going to get the foundation. But what Cummins is making, I mean, there are numerous patents that they are developing on combustion technology and emissions technology and software related firmware and how do we do things essentially, right? And so my ability to be able to go into, say, the SAE archive, that was a great asset for me, because then I knew exactly, I was familiar with that. And then of course organization skills. The design reviews that I had in JPL, they were brutal. Design reviews that when you are very young and essentially PhDs that tell you, no, you don't know what you're talking about, just next. And you're like, but I've been actually pulling all-nighters for the past week on these. I know that it's going to work. And so it gets very personal.
Yeah.
And then that was an asset for me too. I mean, when I went to Cummins, I had a thicker skin and I was more confident on who I was. So...
yeah, that's definitely the presentation skills and being able to take the roasting sessions.
There you go.
Is definitely something to get used to, and at least in my experience, we in one of my classes, I believe it was fluids, We took it with Dr. Choi, and he was very much adamant on being pretty difficult to deal with during presentations, and the feedback that you'd get back would be pretty brutal. But I think now more so, it definitely builds a thicker skin for sure. So,
And you know, I have some. Sharif. You guys know Sharif. He's very tough.
Yeah. Definitely.
Back then was actually, I don't know if you guys took and who I heard that he's no longer. Dr. Phil Seavey, he was doing final element method and vibration analysis too. I took with him, and he was, he will fail the entire class. If he wants it, he will fail it. And so that's some of the things that you experience at college. Having said that, the real experience with industry is that's what I learned. Have a thick skin and be well prepared and be eloquent and be able to convey your ideas. I learned that at JPL. I think I took that with me, and so I think that was very well regarded. And when I took that skill set with me to Cummins.
So overall, from what you're telling us, you have work. You obviously have your own hobbies with your own personal projects. You have a family. What are some of the other hobbies that you have outside of your work?
So I'll start with that. Maybe something that I didn't mention. So one of the reasons that I've left Ecuador also too was actually because I was in business with my brother. So like I said, I come from a family of entrepreneurs, an industrial family. So we set up a business, and business probably I can say that that's my kind of, I have an itch there all the time. And so it was great because I had something that I started with my brother. It worked. It was in essence, we created this database that we sell the fresh cut flowers, and kind of think of it overstock.com, but for flowers. And so we back then we went to the growers and said, hey, can you guys put your inventory on a daily basis on this database? And then we'll present it to wholesalers. It worked, and that's how we moved. And it grew into, we had a year, I think the first 1 or 2 years, couple million dollar sales, and that was early 20s. And it worked, but my heart was not in it. I mean, it was really run a business. It's my hat's off to those business owners. I think you have to have these really, these thick skin and every single other skill that you need just to carry on with these. It's a very, very relentless activity. But then I came back and did the engineering, all right? And so that's some of my hobbies. The other thing is that now, if I, in my mature years and with family, one of the things that I see is I try to see what my kids enjoy too. Because one of the things that I try to hear, I love sailing. I live in El Segundo and right on the beach, and I used to do every Wednesday and Marina Bay with a friend of mine. We used to do the Marina, the Wednesday regattas. I like cycling, tennis, hiking. And now with my family, we do wake surfing, wakeboarding. That's as of last year, that's some of the things that we do. But I really enjoyed something that involves my family and other group of people that we can all laugh and share. And we can all challenge each other. And that's one of the things that about mountain biking, for instance. If you go alone, yeah, it's a good workout. But if you go with friends or with your family, we're going to challenge each other. So
you push each other.
Yeah. I think I heard from a great tennis player once, actually, you always have to play with better players than you to become good. So, and so that's...
You'll always learn from them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You had mentioned during our previous talk how your father was actually like a rally racer. Correct me if I'm wrong. Tell us about what it's like being like the son of a rally racer. I'm sure that's a bit different from a lot of us that kind of grew up with parents that, you know, did a regular like 9-to-5 job or weren't really in that realm.
It was a hobby thing for him, but he got sponsors towards the end, and so it became more of a serious thing too. But it's, I mean, kind of like everything implies is fast. So Daddy, when he was doing it, he was gone a lot, but he also, I think, and I got that from him. He wanted to get me involved and I loved it. So that's how I kind of got my niche for motorsports. And so I did a little bit of it in my early years. I wasn't never a pro and I tried to do that, but then, I think things didn't happen for me in a way that probably did for my dad, because otherwise I would have been there. I think then I had a different age, like, wanted to do the engineering thing. And now I guess, it was great because I saw my dad doing the takeaway for me was actually just do what is good. What is your passion? And he was really had a blast doing it and learned a lot about motorsports, even how to negotiate with the sponsors and things like that. I mean, you guys, we did data with essentially mini, but it's actually kind of very similar. You go ask for money or funds or some resource from sponsors. And so there's a little bit of that too. Behind the scenes, it's from as a kid, it was a blast for me. You ask my mom, probably she's got a totally different version.
That's so cool.
But rally, you know, one of the things that I see now in retrospective, actually, I see, Ken Block and some of the guys here in North America trying to bring some of that rally culture to the US. And I hope it happens. You know, I think if you go to Europe and South America and some other parts of the world, rally is huge, you know, and probably us that we understand the mini Baja and we are somewhat in the industry.
Yeah.
We get it and we see how big it is and in some other parts, but I see some of the big names. I think I saw the other day, I was reading Brian Menzies, who does is that Red Bull. He tried to do a little bit of a rally in Paris-Dakar. And I love that. I hope that you know, we can bring some of that into the US.
Do you ever feel like you want to maybe get into some like rallying or maybe some like weekend type of thing out in Gorman? Because there's a ton of space out there that you can go and take a Subaru and just have a good time.
Yes, no, that was actually something that we want to do. And again, it's something that I see it that my kids are a little older. I think that I can see them getting into it and maybe even them being able to develop those skills. I thought about it when younger, but it would have been not really fair to my family, because as you guys, I mean, we know when we go out and just probably you have 80% of prep and 20% of racing. Oh, yeah. or maybe 90 or in 10, right? So there's a lot of work behind those scenes that you see. And when you looked at some of those Red Bull clips of Paris-Dakar, I mean, those teams there's tons of resources behind it, and just to prep the vehicle and do that. And so that's the part that I don't think that it really is not compatible with my life right now. And so that's why it's easy for me just to get on the boat and do some wake surfing. At this point.
Yeah. Right. Where do you go surfing, by the way?
What was that?
Where do you go surfing?
We surf behind a boat. So.
But so it's out here like a Long Beach or like Redondo Beach area?
No, we go to a lake. And so the boat that we had it's got ballast and essentially pumps the water in the hold of the boat. And so as it goes, as it travels through water, it displaces a lot of water and creates a huge wake. And you jump back in the wake and surf it.
That's awesome.
It's something that I thought, okay, well, I don't think there's going to be the big thing. I did a little surfing, by the way, back in the day too, when I was younger and lighter and in Malibu. But now the boat, I mean, it's just amazing what these new boats can make as far as make these artificial wakes.
You've been at JPL. You're now working at Cummins. You have a family. You've told us about your hobbies. Now, where do you kind of see yourself in the future? What do you kind of see as the next step from here?
It is difficult to see because I do think that I created the experience, the Winzo, to just to probably, and I'm leading a team now, but probably influence the transportation industry, if possible, in a regional manner. I see so clearly where we're going with these alternative energies. I see that the environment that we have is something that we need to be mindful of the natural resources that we have and how we utilize them. And so I wish I can be part of that. I can be a catalyzer and probably leading some of those initiatives with technology companies. I clearly see that the next decade, I think we're changing the way that we move goods, the way that we move passengers at a very drastically fast way. I think regulators too are anticipating a lot of those changes. You can see that on policy, especially in the state of California now. There is, if you go and check some of the CARB 2022 regulations, I think they're leading the world and the nation on what's going to be the onset in the next 10 years. There's definitely some big challenges. I mean, if you talk about electrification, there's a whole set of things that we need to figure out before, essentially generation, distribution, especially in the southwest of our nation. We need to figure out rates and something that is really is appealing to the user. And so in that change, I want to participate in a bigger way. And so, but if you would have asked me these about maybe 20 years ago, what I would have been, and you tell me, Daniel, you know, it was going to be Cummins, and you probably went through JPL, and I probably, like I said, I think I have a humble, I'm waiting humbling just to see what is next, but I still working every day as hard as I can just yeah. to have that. But with balance, I want my family too. I want to be there for them too, because I guess I leave one of the things that we moved to a rural property now. We live outside of the city in LA County. And so we're not completely off the grid, but this property is in a water well. I have solar, and now I'm teaching my family. So look, this is how much of the resources we use. I mean, the lighting, the AC, and things like that, we don't pay attention. I mean, we pay the bills, yes, but now they have a better idea what's a megawatt. How much does it look? 6,000 gallons of water. How much is going to last us, and things like that.
Yeah, oh, I see. Yeah, that's. That's awesome. So your future's in transportation, energy, and logistics behind it.
I think that's going to be the future for a lot of engineers. If you think about it, I think how we reconcile what we have and how we make a very conscious next step. And look, there's still going to be a business opportunity in all of it. It's just how we drive some of those changes.
I totally agree. So this will actually be our sort of our last question. You've obviously JPL Cummins coming from Ecuador, and probably one of the more notable things, especially for our audience, is you came from SAE, and a lot of people have just graduated like Aaron or within SAE or, you know, already in the industry like myself. What's one like small piece of advice that an experienced engineer like you and manager like yourself can give to us?
I'll give you something that's general. If you think about it, if you can connect career-wise, and that probably you can take it as a general advice for in life. I mentioned a few names who helped me or were very were at a crucial point in my career, just to build this career that I have. I mentioned my dad. I mentioned Dr. Sharif, Kevin. And you think about it, every time that you do anything, I remember the first class that I took with Sharif, I make sure that my work was clean, had a good presentation. And so he recommended me. The other, Dr. Shah, actually, who enrolled me, who got me connected with JPL. And again, we that was another in a design review and a project that I put a presentation of a creeper with the mechanical advantage that I was able to explain in a very easy way, something that other students were not able to do it enough. And probably my design, it was somewhat complicated, but I think what I really was good at, tried to convey that idea that somebody will understand me in 2 minutes, right? And so that was the other thing. So make sure that people understand your communication skills. They need to be up there. Even though, you know, English is not my first language, I try to make sure that people understand what I'm trying to convey. The other thing is just make sure that your work is clean. Like I mentioned earlier, I think when Dr. Shah, and I remember he mentioned these, and I haven't talked to Kevin about these, because when Dr. Shah met me and I did a design review, Kevin was already working at JPL. And I think he went and ask Kevin and some other Cal State LA members, hey, what do you guys think about Daniel Polo? And had already have the SAE experience with him. And Kevin, I think, said, yeah, no, Daniel's good. So that steering wheel that I built, the first project that Kevin gave me in SAE, I think yeah. He was impressed. And you will think it's a trivial thing, it's nothing. And you would have probably, you know, brushed it off and said, yeah, I'm almost an engineer, don't give me a steering wheel. But I did it like I really care. Yeah. And so no matter how big or small the project is, just think about this. I mean, your work is going to have an influence on people ultimately. And so that is your presentation. Your work is your business card, essentially. And so Be mindful of that, even no matter how small it is. And they give you essentially something that you need to clean up on a table, just do it and do it graciously. So. That will be probably the biggest piece of advice.
No, yeah, I totally agree. We've had one of our advisors actually tell us about our Baja car. Like, that's a rolling resume. Like, what you presented at competition, that is your rolling resume. Not only are obviously other companies that are sponsoring the event are going to see that, and they're going to see the work that you're doing, but also other team members, other people are there, and it's a small world. So, like you said, you know, people like Kevin Narr vouched for you. We're like, yeah, this guy's good. So it's like, you know, I definitely understand where you're coming from.
It is that. And look, when you get into the industry, even you talk at the global, and that happened to me. When you work at a global you can take the globe as your little village. And that's what it is, because say on the trucking industry or on the power generation industry globally, I mean, there is a handful of people that really know it well and they know each other. And I have friends in Australia and the UK and China. And when I was in those technical roles and I did presentations on power generation, we will talk about amongst each other for years. And that was a little, very small world that we owned. And so you're the way that you present yourself and your work is very important.
Yeah, just building those connections and networking definitely goes a long way, even if it's just a, hey, how's it going to your coworker, right?
Correct.
So yeah, I mean, I appreciate your time, Daniel. Thanks for answering these questions. I know they'll definitely be helpful for any young engineer, any seasoned engineer that's looking for answers. Is there anything in particular that you want to plug? Like maybe you have a LinkedIn or like an Instagram that nobody knows about or something?
No, I mean, I thought about my I've been thinking about more, and you guys are pros at these, and I see Liz giving us all of these advice about, I mean, we didn't have any of these when I mean, we have social media, but not to the extent that it's important now. So I don't have a channel. I probably will come up with one soon, but I'll let you know. At this point, yeah. I'll take a rain check.
Yeah, definitely. Right. Definitely.
No worries.
But yeah, thank you, Daniel, we really do appreciate you. Spending the time. I know you're super busy and you want to get back to your lathe and your mail back in your garage. But we hope to have you here on again. Hopefully, maybe with Kevin, we can have you on here and just have a whole Baja SA reunion type of thing.
Yeah, a little sure. Podcast.
Yeah,
that would be awesome.
Yeah. So this has been the Staying Muddy Podcast. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Staying Muddy Podcast. Make sure to follow at Staying Muddy on Instagram. If you like what we do, join our subreddit, Staying Muddy Podcast. Or if you would like to learn more about our team, you can visit our website, Castellet Baja CE, or follow us on social media at Castellet Baja CE. Thanks again for listening.